The duty of journalists. Philosopher Noam Chomsky once described it as the act of telling the truth. You go back to the facts, look at the documents, discover what the record is, and report it that way. But being a journalist can come with a high price. Intimidation, imprisonment, harassment, beatings, and at times, the loss of life. Wednesday, May the 11th, 6:13 a.m.
We are on the way there. I will bring you news as soon as the picture becomes clear.
Al Jazeera's correspondent Shireen Abu Akleh emailed her colleagues at the regional bureau. Shireen was on assignment in the city of Jenin, in the northern occupied West Bank, where she had been reporting on Israeli army raids of the refugee camp, just like she'd done countless times in her more than 25 years at Al Jazeera. It was just another day, but shortly after...
We're bringing some breaking news. An Al Jazeera correspondent has been shot by...
Shireen Abu Akleh became the news.
...that she's been killed. Shireen Abu Akleh was working in Palestine. She was a veteran correspondent.
Israeli forces had shot her in the head. She was rushed to a hospital where she was declared dead at 7:13 a.m. According to the Palestinian Ministry of Information, some 45 journalists have been killed by Israeli forces since the year 2000. But Shireen's death has shocked and resonated the world over. Throughout the years, she positioned herself as an iconic narrator of the Palestinian-Israeli struggle. Shireen was known for going beyond the news to report the day-to-day lives of Palestinians living under occupation. She visited their homes, from Hebron to Nablus, Jenin to Jerusalem, her reports beaming into households across the world, making her audience feel they knew her personally. 51-year-old Shireen continued to tell the Palestinian story, even after her death. As thousands gathered in occupied East Jerusalem for her funeral, and the casket was starting its final journey, Israeli border police attacked the procession. Their actions forcing the pallbearers to almost drop Shireen's coffin, seizing Palestinian flags from mourners. It drew unusual, widespread international condemnation.
I'm Stephanie Decker in Al Jazeera's studio in Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. On this edition of Talk to Al Jazeera in the Field, we not only explore the legacy of Shireen Abu Akleh, but we look at the challenges of being a Palestinian journalist reporting on a highly personal story.
Shireen is not the kind of person that can be forgotten. She's not the kind of person that should be forgotten. It's such a heavy burden.
The immunity that the Israeli army is having, no one, they're not being held accountable.
No respect for the dead, no respect for the living, nothing. Yeah, who'd do that?
Like every few months, every year, we lose journalists.
On posters now, they say the daughter of Palestine, she was.
And we look at how the media is often directly targeted, making journalists at times become the story.
The death of Shireen Abu Akleh is a very personal story to those who worked alongside her and loved her. Rania Zabaneh is one of Al Jazeera's producers in the occupied West Bank.
Describe to me what she meant to you and what was she like?
She is genuine, smart, professional, funny. She was an idol, a mentor, somebody you'd look up to, down to earth. Whatever you say about her is always not enough. There's this thing about her when people say that somebody's out of this world, sometimes there are people out of this world living amongst us, and you don't realize that until they're gone, which is a bit sad, but she's that kind of person. There are probably like 1,000 more adjectives that I can use about Shireen. That's what comes to mind now. On posters now, they say the daughter of Palestine, she was. It's like I'm so privileged to have known her, let alone worked with her. I feel I'm honored, I'm proud. I'm humbled. Yeah.
Where were you when you first heard? What went through your mind?
I was at home. There are several journalists groups on WhatsApp and other social media apps like we usually do. And at 5:30-ish, my phone started. It was on silent, but I could see the notifications. And when it's usually like that, then it's continuous. I know something wrong is happening somewhere. So I woke up naturally, started looking at my phone, and I saw that the army was in Jenin. I thought it's another one of those.
Another day.
Another day. It's simply just another day. There were voice notes, and given that I was looking at this while I'm already in bed, I put the phone like this, and I heard somebody shouting, "Shireen, Shireen, she was hit." And I was like, wait a second, which Shireen? My heart fell. But I thought, you know, what's the worst? Yani, maybe rubber bullet, maybe something like that. So woke up, started making phone calls. I called the guys who I thought would be with her. Just asked them if they're there or not. They said not, and then I called the hospital, and he said, yes, she just came in. She was shot in the face. So, damn it, it's probably a stupid rubber bullet or something that's just going to ruin her face. 5-10 minutes later, I called him. He said, Rania, it doesn't look good. We're still resuscitating her. And that was khalas. You'd think something like that would happen to other people. You never think that it's going to be you or people you're close to or people you know. There's always danger in our job, right? We fool ourselves every time when we say, we're good, we've got our helmet, we've got our flags, we're fine. We stand where the folks are. Everybody's like, we're in this together. We've been into training a while. We know how it goes. We've been covering the same patch for a while. You know it. You know it. So you don't think it's going to happen to you. You just eliminate that as an option. So no, yeah, no, you just don't think it's going to happen to you. You just rule it out, simply. Just you rule it out.
You worked through those days.
Mm.
What was that like? Must have been extremely difficult for you.
Emotionally, I feel like a wreck. Mentally, physically, torn. But you know what? There's like a drive that keeps pushing you because she deserves justice. And if it wasn't us, her colleagues and her friends, who is going to tell her story?
Did you have any doubt as to who shot her?
No. No. I've been covering this patch for long enough to know the sounds, the locations, the colleagues, the circumstances. Like, eyewitnesses said that there were no gunmen around. And I, knowing Shireen and knowing how my colleagues in Al Jazeera and in those areas work, there's no way they would have stood there if there were gunmen in the area or close to them.
You're back to work now, back in the office. How does that feel? I guess you've been so busy covering, right? Every day there was something you had to produce. There was the funeral. You were working. You're now going to continue working, but it's the day after. Like, how does that feel when you come into the office now?
Empty. Coming in, I used to go to her offices upstairs, and oftentimes she'd be sitting there. You know, I'd come in, say, good morning, how are things? We'd sit down, have a chat. What have you got up your sleeve? We'd discuss features, what's happening and what's not. And she's not there. Her loss is painful. It's sad. It makes me angry. But what makes me scared is that people might forget, and we shouldn't forget. Shireen is not the kind of person that can be forgotten, and she's not the kind of person that should be forgotten. And it's our duty, and it's such a heavy burden.
Were you surprised when you saw those shocking images at her funeral when they wanted to start leaving the hospital?
Insane. It's just insane. For 25 years, Shireen was covering the violations of the Israeli occupation, the oppression, But until the last minute, they didn't give her peace or respect. She was in a coffin. She was in a casket, carried, like... No respect for the dead, no respect for the living, nothing. Tells you something about how Israel's arrogance... You know, I'm not a political analyst, forget.
Well, you've been covering this for years. I think your opinion is valid.
That's the thing. I'm shocked, but not surprised. Yeah, who'd do that? And why? I still don't know. How did they sell it in Israeli media? I really don't know. I'm curious. Can you sell such a thing? It's like, what PR machine can cover whitewash what you did to a coffin and pole bearers and a hearse? Why? And the flag, like, really?
How do you think she would feel that she became the story? Do you think she would have known that also the love and respect and outpour of adoration that she had earned?
She was loved, no doubt. I'm sure she felt it because she was at peace with herself in general. But her being the Shireen we know, she's very humble. We knew Shireen. She's like part of our family at Al Jazeera. But with the funeral and everything, the outpour of love and people was like, you know what? She's not ours anymore. She's everybody's. It was a bit English-Arabic in my head now, wait. Consoling to see that, to see the output of love. Wherever she is, I hope she knows.
How difficult is it to operate as a Palestinian journalist?
We don't think about it a lot. And when we do, there's always this laundry list of, you start going checkpoints, access to information, being harassed or being shot at. But you never put on that on the list. And when you do, you don't take it personally. Going to Jenin at checkpoints, there are those... military towers, right? And there's always a soldier with a gun pointed at you. For every Palestinian, this became part of the scene, pretty much. But that day, I remember passing through checkpoints and I'm just looking at them and like, are we crazy guys or... We're crazy, because it's there every day, every few meters, and we just pass it.
You mean it's normalized?
It's normalized, and it's scary. We shouldn't normalize the occupation. We shouldn't.
Do you think something is going to change now? Because I do feel, in a way, again, there's been a spotlight on this issue that has become normalized. I mean, politically, you have Arab states normalizing relations with Israel. Jerusalem and the Palestinians was always a big call of the cause, right? Do you think this is going to change anything?
I hope it is, but I'm afraid it's not. That's my fear. Because we've been covering, all of us, we've been covering this long enough to know that in a week, in a month, in a few months, the story dies down. Because
it's the way it is.
It's the way it is. And it scares me that Shireen is just going to be another one. I don't mean bad. I don't mean to belittle anybody who was killed for the cause, right? But at the same time, this shouldn't be the case. Somebody should be held accountable, because otherwise...
The news of Shireen's death caused shockwaves amongst the millions of viewers who had watched her reports for years.
The second we announced her death and she was killed, I swear there's like here, like at least 1,000 people like in this square of meters. I swear.
You heard them?
They were here. Journalists, like regular
it was
people.
When they put her body back.
Exactly. Yeah, when she went down, when they brought her down, yeah. All these people, they were here in the office, crying and like holding her pictures and making phone calls and like posting photos and remembering Shireen. And people, they found out how much they love Shireen.
You were working the night before.
Yes.
So she was the team was overnighting in Jenin, covering basically what is a daily occurrence, pretty much.
Actually, since like the whole like this wave of escalation, we wanted to have a crew all the time over there. And on Tuesday evening, I was here working, and I was coordinating with her on WhatsApp. And then I say to her, "Get some rest. You know, you never know what's gonna happen. That's it." And then she called me around 8:30 p.m. on Tuesday. And we discussed about her like rotation with another one, and if I can do something on Wednesday morning, the morning she was killed, to bring her back to Ramallah on Thursday. And I said to her, okay, yeah, for sure, Shirin, I will make sure that you leave on Thursday. Unfortunately, she came on Thursday to the president's office on the coffin. And on Wednesday morning, I got this phone call from a friend. He's a journalist from Jenin. It was 6:23 a.m. in the morning. And he goes to me, "Wissam, are you awake?" I said, "No, you just woke me up." I said to him, "What's going on?" He said to me, "Jivara was shot in Jenin." I said, "No, not Jivara. This is Shirin." And then he said to me, "Just look at the video." And I watched the video. It was like for 8 seconds maybe. They were holding Shirin and trying to put her on the car, inside the car. Completely, I'm on denial case.
Because now the funeral's over, the main events are over. Now you're back in the office,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
How does that feel?
It's too hard. That's why I told you. It's personally and professionally. It's two levels. It's going to be too hard. And I remember when I have received the videos were taken and shot by my colleague Majdi, who was with her. We received the videos. I couldn't watch it. But while I was sending the material to Doha, I was shaking like this, because this is the first time I'm saying this is the rushes of the murder, Shirin. It was too hard for me.
How dangerous is it? How unpredictable is it to work here? Even when I don't think anyone is better versed than you guys or local journalists who cover it constantly. You know the language of this place. You know how it works.
Usually when we go to any place, when like an Israeli military operation is like happening, they are coming to arrest someone, you know, so they start to surround the area. So we always go by groups wearing the helmet and the flak jacket. Exactly, just they can see us. You know, we want them to see us.
Do they usually target you?
Yes. Like every few months, every year, we lose journalists. Sometimes they shoot you without any warnings.
Do you think something will change? Do you think Shirin's death
has put
another spotlight on this?
I hope. I hope the death of Shirin changed the mentality and the way of like what Israel doing with the journalists. I wish.
Palestinian journalists have often been at the receiving end of the Israeli army's use of force.
How dangerous is it operating here as a journalist? I mean, there is a language, right, that you understand after years and years of covering the ground, but
there is no language. There is no language, there is no understanding. Because it was, in the beginning, even during the invasion, like me and Shirin were like playing between tanks and helicopters, shooting and bombing and everything, but there was respect. There was a space of respect in which we are journalists, we are not part of this or part of that. Israeli army respect us as a journalist. Not out of respect, but no one will come close to you. But for the last 5 years, there was a huge shift in that. A huge shift, like on the ground, a huge shift. They don't respect that you're a journalist. I'm wearing my vest, press. I have millions of videos being on air pushed by Israeli soldier or pepper, like they're peppering my face. Yeah, my face. Or holding the gun, like the third time I was shot, I was shot by purpose. It wasn't by mistake.
You were shot multiple times.
Three times. The first time was on purpose. Third time was on purpose. Only one time it was by mistake. Like I was just in the way.
Why do you think there's been this shift in the last 5 years? What changed, do you think?
The immunity that the Israeli army is having, no one, they're not being held accountable for what they're doing. Like, you can kill me and be free to do whatever you want with your life.
How would you describe operating as a... Is there a difference between Palestinian journalists or foreign journalists who come in?
Yes, of course. How many times did you go to Gaza?
Many.
Never been. Never been there. And every time there's a big operation in Gaza, they refuse our permit. You were able to go to Jerusalem to cover the funeral. I had to escape through hills to come to my friend, to my sister's funeral, because they didn't give me a permit.
What's it like covering the occupation? You're living it. Like, can you detach yourself personally from covering it? Is it possible?
It's not possible. It's not possible because that's what she, what made Shireen so different. That what made Shireen so different. That she was telling the story of her daily struggle with being able to detach and put it out there away from her. After Shireen, I don't know how good I will be at that. Like, I try, but I don't know how good I'm gonna be at that.
Are you angry?
Of course I'm angry. What do you think? She was going there in a quiet time.
That's the thing, it was no...
It was so quiet. It was so quiet.
It wasn't a big operation.
It wasn't a big operation. She was going there like, I'm going to go and sit in the hotel and be bored and come back. And I'm just going to waste my time that I have to be spending with my family. Yes, I'm mad.
You were at her casket.
Yeah.
What happened?
Nothing. They just opened the door of the hospital so we can move. And then suddenly they start attacking, and I was like clearing her knees. They were just holding the casket and going out. It's only your right to mourn your friend. It's only your right to walk in her funeral. It's a traditional thing. It's not political. It's traditional. It's pure traditional. You don't take the casket in the car. In my culture, in our culture, we walk holding the casket, whether it's Shireen or a little baby or it's anyone. It wasn't specially for Shireen that we want to hold the casket and walk. It's a cultural thing. You want to cancel this cultural part of Shireen's funeral? For what? I mean, what would she do? People who are saying a goodbye. What will this... I mean,
people were saying... This is the occupation, but this was
this
something
is not occupation. No, this is
no,
not
something we've seen.
No. This is not occupation. I'm sorry. I was standing because I had also to jump. They closed the door. They didn't allow anyone in. I'm worried about Larine and Lena, and so I.
Her nieces.
I want to get there in any way, so I had to jump from the door. Before I did jump, I was standing in front of the soldier, and I also saved this picture. And I'm saying, I'm her sister, I want to go in. He was laughing, looking at me and laughing. This is not occupation.
Have you seen something like this before? You've seen a lot.
No. I haven't seen anything like this before. No. In a funeral? No. Like, it's beyond humanity. It's beyond humanity. What happened there is beyond humanity.
There's a lot of international spotlight on it, right?
It's about time. Because we got to a point where our life doesn't matter. Like, we're just going to be numbers. Numbers with no justice, with no payback. Why is it fair that at the same day Shireen passed away, that there's a student who was killed by Israeli sniper in El Bire? On his way back from school. Why? Tell me, why would a kid holding a stone with all the ammunition that you have deserve being killed? We got to a point where our life doesn't matter.
In terms of when you're dealing with the occupation, dealing with your job, dealing with... Do you feel something has changed? Has this changed how you're going to operate, how you're going to move forward?
Of course not. Of course not. Now I really want to go back to the field more. I want to keep on telling the story. More and more and more. If you think if you killed like the idol, that you're going to kill the soul in us, you're stupid. So Shireen created a million more Shireen to tell the story on the ground.
Shireen Abu Aqle, Al Jazeera, Palestine.